We're holding on Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, five lines from the end of the narrow line, one begins Hashedra.
Okay,
we started talking about the concept of where one of the eight basic types of terephis is called Nefula, where an animal fell off from a height, ten trochim. The Gemara never spelled out how many trochim we're talking about, but the Rishonim explained ten trochim. Similar to the concept, that's deep enough to kill an animal, would be one that's 10 fucking deep, right? One thing, by the way, the post can mention is you have to consider also the animal's legs take up a couple of trochim as well. And here we're talking about the whole issue we're talking about is that internal organs may have gotten crushed or mangled or what have you, so you have to factor that in as well. If you have it fell off a height of, let's say, 6 tefachim, and then the legs of it, from the legs of it until the bottom of the belly is another 4, then there's your 10 tefachim as well. Anyway, the point is that we started discussing the idea, the underlying issue, why you'd have a problem if an animal fell off a roof or what have you, is the concept called risuke evarim, which is that internal organs may have gotten damaged or crushed or cut or what have you. So we talked about a couple of cases in that regard. One thing we said was that, first of all, if we don't know that the animal fell, then there's not a problem. Even if we find, for example, that an animal is dragging its leg, it doesn't necessarily mean that it fell. It could be it just has sciatica or something. And second of all, we said a concept that it only applies if the animal fell unknowingly, basically. But for example, if it jumps down from a roof or something, or even if it jumps through a skylight, it's able to estimate in its animal brain whether it's going to survive the fall, and therefore we don't have a problem with it. Okay. So more on that topic. Amar Rav Huna, Zchorim hamenagchim zezeh. When you have rams that are goring each other, like you have rams or other male animals like that get into fights for dominance or whatever. Well, zchorim specifically means rams, but yeah, the same thing would apply to bulls, of the pastures. Because zchorim means rams, it actually translates elim. Zchorim means males, but in terms of animals, zchorim unspecified means rams. Yeah, that's how it is. Anyway, but yeah, the pastures, the same thing would apply to other animals as well. So if they're goring each other, we don't have to worry about this risuke varim, the fact that one of them is banging in and banging into the other one and butting it or whatever. That doesn't cause a problem. And even if we see if the animals are getting hurt, they're standing there and they're hurt, that's not a problem. Simra ba'alma hu denokit lahu. It's just they're feeling the heat. They're feeling like they maybe got a minor injury. Something that if you see afterwards, you see that there was a fight between two animals, and afterwards one of them is like Rashi says doyagim v'koyavim. It's like it's worried, sort of like sad and hurt. Then you don't have to worry about risuke evarim. At most, any injuries that it'll have will have been superficial ones. We can say basically that now it feels like it's overheated or something, basically. However, inofu la'ara, however, if in the course of the fight one of the animals falls to the ground, vade chayshinan, then indeed we have to be choshish that it may have gotten internal injuries in the course of that. And the difference is, Tosa says, because the difference is, now before we were saying 10 tefachim, if an animal was fighting with another one and got knocked down, you don't even necessarily have 10 tefachim.
No.
However, the difference is, because it fell down, because it was pushed by the other one, therefore even less than 10 tefachim, because it was a hard push, therefore, even less than 10 fucking might be enough to cause internal injury. So if another bull pushes another bull, a ram pushes another ram, or whatever, yeah. And the point is also, because unlike before when we were talking about that the animal figures out for itself, is it going to be able to jump or is it not, here neither animal expects to lose the fight. Both of them are in the fight to win. So like when it all of a sudden gets knocked down by the other one, it's something unexpected. Soon we're going to talk about, for example, the Gemara is going to talk about in certain cases, you can say like the animal holds on, it braces itself in order not to fall so hard, but here in the heat of the fight, it's not going to do that.
It's legs down.
It's like braces itself, right, in order to fall more gently, right, but here that doesn't apply. Right. Okay. Another din, Omer of Menashe. Hi, dichri. Dichri is the same word as chorim in Hebrew, so yeah, I don't think.
If you suspect that there's a risuke varim Dennis Trey.
Okay, so you actually have, we're going to talk about on Almond Bays, you have like this. If you chef the, if the animal doesn't even get up and you chef it right away, then you have a problem. Then the animal is traced because there may well have been internal injuries and they don't necessarily come out right away. Right, but here where you have already, there's a reyesa because you know it fell off the roof or was knocked down by another animal or whatever. So what it is like this. We're going to talk about it on Almond Bays. You have a couple of possibilities. You can have where the animal stands up, and the din is that then it still requires bedika. What the bedika is, we'll talk on Almond Bays, what exactly needs to be checked. Then you can have the case where it lives for 24 hours, where then also, so then actually you have some of the Rishonim learn that even then it still requires bedikah, but nevertheless, though, at least, you can do, in principle, you can do the bedikah. There are more mentions, and actually Rashi mentions on other days from as far back as the Bahag, who's one of the Gaonim, that we don't have the expertise to do this kind of bedikah anymore. So already in the times of the Gaonim, they consider they don't. Rashi himself disagrees with that and says, no, you gather together all the Shoftim and have them check, but nevertheless, the consensus of the post-skim is like what the Bahag says, that we don't have that expertise, and therefore when you have a case like this where it says that you require bedikah, I shouldn't say the consensus, but you have many poskim who hold that then we can't do that kind of bedikah. Therefore, it's either the animal walks, as we're going to talk on Amud Beis, and then you don't need any bedikah at all, or it doesn't walk, and then in principle you need bedikah, and since we don't have the expertise to do it, then the animal has to be considered treif misafir. Or you have, again, if it lives for 12 months afterwards, we talked at the beginning of the parak, and we're going to talk later on in the parak, the idea that a shaper doesn't live for 12 months. So therefore, if it survives 12 months, then that also shows that. Okay. Anyway. Omer of Menashe. Hai dichri de ganvi ganvi. When you have rams that are stolen by thieves. Now, a typical way, how would they steal it, is you have the rams are inside an enclosure, inside like a barn or something. So the thieves will break into the enclosure or something, and they'll take the animals and throw them over the fence, so that then they can climb over themselves and get the animals and take them. So they threw them over the fence. Is there a problem of risuke varim? No. Ein choshishin mishum risuke varim. You don't have to worry about risuke varim. My timer. Now, why would that be? Kishodulahu, because when they throw the animals, these guys are experts in what they do. They throw the animal very carefully. Amasnayu shadalahu. They throw them in such a way that they land on their feet. They don't want them to land on their back because they don't want their spine to break or whatever. Kihechi delirhati kamayu, because they want the animal to be able to run ahead of them. They don't want to have to be carrying the animal. It's a large animal. They don't want to be carrying it from place to place. They want that they should be able to tell the animal to move and it'll start moving. So therefore, they're going to take care to begin with when they steal it that they don't injure it. Ahadrinu, on the other hand, if they return the animal, same thing, they throw it back over the fence, vade chashin, and then we have to be choshish because then they're not necessarily careful to throw it in a way that it's not going to get injured. However, vahani mili da adrinu machmas yira. However, there's a difference in that. That would only apply if they return the animals because they're afraid. Let's say, for example, because they hear that the police are after them or something. So then, fine, they don't want to be caught with the stolen goods in their possession, but they're not going to necessarily be careful to return it in such a way that it doesn't get injured. Aval machmas tshuva, but if they're returning the animal because they decided to do tshuva, then tshuva mal yisuhu da'avdi, then we can assume that when they do tshuva, they're trying to undo the thing as fully as possible. So then we can assume that the same thing, when they throw it back over, they're going to be careful to throw it over in a way that it won't get injured. Okay, so basically what it is on the way out, when the thieves are stealing it, you never have to worry about it. On the way back in, it depends what their motivation is for returning it.
If they're afraid,
then you have to worry about risuke varim. And if they're doing it because of tshuva, then you don't have to worry.
But if they're afraid, they don't want to get caught, so they would throw it
over. They'll just throw it over however. They just don't want to be caught with stolen goods. Yeah, well, they're in a hurry, but also they just care. They don't want to be caught. They don't want to be caught red-handed. They don't care whether the owner ends up having a loss from it or not.
If the animal is injured, they...
Yeah, well, what would they care? The police are after them. So, okay, like this, here, what do you mean? I didn't steal anything. Did you see anything in my possession? This poor guy is saying that his animal got injured. I don't know anything about it. Yeah. Okay. So and that's the halacha. Yeah, that's the halacha. By the way, I should mention in this whole Gemara over here, we have sometimes when we're saying that chayshinan, that we're concerned, or choshishin, sometimes we're saying loy chayshinan or ein choshishin, And so what does that mean exactly? So you have many Rishonim understand that it means when we say loy chashin, it means you don't even need to do any bedikah on them. You can just, if you wanted, you could check the animal right then and there, and it would be mutter. You have the Ran, and I think also the Ramban, who hold that no, even when we say loy chashinin, it still means you would have to do a bedikah. They would learn that chashinin would mean that maybe a bedikah is not even going to be effective in this case, and therefore that even if we say we have the expertise to do bedikah, that chashinin, if we said in these cases, well, choshish would mean we're not able to do. Would mean the bedikah is not going to be effective in this case.
Why would you do bedikah?
That's the point. Now, they would say that when you say loy chashinin, the Ram, for example, says when we say in our Gemara loy chashinin. For example, when we say over here that again these Ganavim stole these animals, we're saying Ein Choshishin Mishum Rizuk Evarim. The Ran would understand that to mean Ein Choshishin means it's not certain that there was Rizuk Evarim, but you still have to do a bedikah to make sure that there wasn't. Whereas Choshishin would mean that you have that's not even a valid thing to check it. Even if you check it and you don't find anything wrong, still no good.
So it's always
trace. So not always trace. No, in the first case, it would mean in principle you could do bedikah. And those Rishonim who hold that you could do bedikah, for example, Rashi would say, okay, you do bedikah and that's that.
So what's the difference between chashinun and chashinun?
Because according to the Ram, chashinun would mean that you can't do anything. The animal is trace, misafik. And loy chashinun would mean you have to do a bedikah. And if you find a bedikah and find nothing wrong, then you're okay.
So chashinun, you don't do bedikah.
Because it doesn't help. Because it doesn't help according to him, right.
According to other
posting, it means that that's the case where you can do bedikah. Okay, fine. All right. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. Here's another din in this regard. Hika al rosh of a hocha lo chrapes nava. If you hit the animal on the head and the blow ended up going toward the tail, or al nava of a hocha lo chrapes rosha, or the other way around, you hit it on the tail and the blow went all the way to the head. There are two ways that the Rishonim have of understanding what the situation is over here. One is that what we mean is that you hit the animal with a stick, and in other words, for example, so the way we have Rashi in front of us is sort of a combination of the two explanations. But one explanation is, for example, you intended to hit it on the head,
yeah,
and instead, accidentally, you ended up doing you use a longer stick or whatever, and you ended up hitting it on the head and the tail together, but not touching the spine at all. You know, the back of an animal is a little bit concave. So therefore, you can have, it's possible to hit just the head and the tail without hitting anything in between. The other explanation is that we mean even you have, for example, a stick which is shaped pretty much like the animal's spine. It has a curve in it, and so you ended up doing a blow that went along the entire length of the spine from head to tail. That's the thing. According to the first explanation, you only hit the head and the tail and missed everything in between. According to the second explanation, we're talking about one long stick that hit along the entire length of the animal from head to tail. Take a look, because you have the back of an animal is a little bit, the back of an animal is a little bit concave. You have the head is here, the tail is here. It's possible to have a straight stick which just hits here and here. No, not the animal is moving. The animal is standing there, let's say, but you took a straight stick, for example, and gave it a blow on the head where one end of the stick hit the head and the other end hit the tail. Or not the end, per se, because the end, we're going to say, is a problem. Whatever. The point is that you only had, the stick was straight, so it only hit the head and the tail without hitting the parts in between, because the parts in between curve away from underneath it. I'm not seeing you. You have diagrams right here. You can see, you have pictures right here. You can see over here.
How can you hit two things at the same time?
Because you have a long stick where you're standing over here, and with a stick, and you hit the animal so that one part of the stick goes over here, one part goes over here, but not, it doesn't touch the back. It doesn't touch the entire spine.
The
entire.
The other one.
No, the other one is no. The other one is slightly different. The other one is you have a stick which is also long enough to reach. In both cases, you have a stick which is the full length of the animal.
Yeah.
But the difference is, in the first case, you only have the only places on the animal where it hits are the head and the tail. So it doesn't matter whether you're standing at the head end and hit the head and then the tail or vice versa. The point is it only touched those two spots. The other explanation would be that you had a curved stick or a whip or something, and therefore it actually went along the entire length of the spine.
Well, the back of the animal was fine.
Yeah. No, that sort of deal. So, okay, anyway. In those cases, keneged kol hashed rekola, so if the blow is along the entire length of the spine, Ein choshishin mishum resuke evarim. Then you don't have to worry about resuke evarim because the fact that it was one blow, the fact that it was one blow that landed along the whole length of the animal, or only on the head and only on the tail, means, in other words, there's very little likelihood that anything got broken. Well, on the other hand, v'isholim chotra apalgi degaba. However, what happens if the stick is not long enough to reach the full length of the animal? It only reaches, let's say, halfway along the back, and then the end of it hits the animal in the middle of the back. Well, then the force of the stick is concentrated on the end of it. So then chayshinan. Then we have to be concerned that there was risk of kevarim. So you actually have
the stroke was anywhere else than the shidra.
No. We're talking about it was on the shidra, but it wasn't the full length of the shidra. It was on someplace on the middle of the shidra. So then the spinal cord was something. No, someplace in the middle, someplace along the back of the animal. So then the problem is that the force of the blow is concentrated over there, so therefore the shedra might have been broken at that particular point, the chota shedra, the spinal cord might have been broken at that particular point, as opposed to when you have one long thing, there's no particular part of it where there's any more force than there is any other. So therefore you're okay. But if the stick landed in the middle of the back, then so you're going along the length of the animal, but it lands in the middle of the back, so at that place, you would have to worry about that there might be risk of kevarim. You have, by the way, machlokas rishonim, whether that means, would you only have to check, in that case, would you only have to check the spinal cord, or is there the possibility, maybe you need to check the various internal organs as well? Maybe we would say, once we're worried about risk of kevarim, then the usual rule would apply, that we're going to say later on, that you need to check everything. Okay. Also, if the stick has knots on it, you know, it's not a smooth stick, it has like knots with branches came out from it, and then we're cut off. Same thing, chayshin, and we have to be concerned, because each place where there's a knot, there's a greater force over there. The imachia, paske, and one more possibility, what if you didn't hit the animal along its length? What if you hit it along its width? What if you hit it along the width, someplace in the middle of the back? Same problem, chayshinan, we have to be concerned that there was risk of kevarim. Because again, that point on the back over there, you have the force, it's concentrated over there. Okay. All right, mordinim, Amar of Nachman, beis harechem ein bei mishum risk of kevarim. When it comes to the womb, there's no issue of risk of kevarim. So, Rashi and most of the Rishonim explain what this means is like this. If you have a baby animal, a baby calf, let's say it was born, just now, you don't have to worry that there was risk of kevarim when in the course of being born. That is, after all, I mean, it comes out a fairly narrow place. You might have to be concerned maybe that some internal organs got squashed or whatever. No, you don't have to worry about it. Now, you have a number of the Rishonim ask the question. I mean, isn't that fairly obvious? The fact is, most newborn animals do live. If we were to worry about risk of kevarim, then obviously it wouldn't be the case. So there's a lot of possibilities that they talk about. One possibility is Rashi implies over here that you don't have to keep it meshless. You don't have to keep it 24 hours. In other words, if we were to say there's a problem with risk of kevarim, fine, we're not going to say most animals are going to die from it, but nevertheless, because you have the chashash, maybe the din is you should not be allowed to shech the newborn animal on the day it's born. You should have to wait 24 hours to make sure that afterwards, if you do a bedikah, that it'll work. No, and then other Rishonim talk about also, the Gemara itself is going to talk about soon, that you have a case where the baby animal was able to stand independently on the ground, but you can have more than standing, you can have where it's walking, where we know there's no issue of risk of kevarim if the animal is able to walk unaided and just as good. So the same thing, maybe you could argue, some of the Rishonim explain that maybe the what the Gemara is saying is you might have thought to say that if the newborn does not stand up and able to walk right away, maybe potentially there's a problem with risk of kevarim, you should have to wait or whatever. No, we don't have to worry about that. Right, exactly. The Rambam has a whole different explanation of this Beit HaRechem Ein Bei Mishum Risuk HaEvarim. The Rambam understands the Gemara to be saying that when, like this, we're going to say on Amud Beis, that when you have an animal with a possible problem of Risuk HaEvarim, you have to check all of its internal organs. However, and the din is if any internal organ is found to be crushed or squashed or whatever, then it's straight, even if that organ is in and of itself is not a vital organ. For example, we're going to talk later on that the spleen is not a vital organ. We mentioned earlier that if there's a hole in it, in certain places it's safe, but if the spleen as a whole is removed, then the animal is kosher, just like with a person can also live without a spleen. But nevertheless, if, for example, you found that the spleen was squashed or otherwise not looking the way it should, then the animal would still be traced because of that. However,
the spleen is squashed
or otherwise misshapen or otherwise looks differently. Because that's the rule. That's the Rishu Kevarim is all about that. It's a separate kind of trachea. It's true that if the spleen as a whole was...
The animal can live without the spleen.
Right, but nevertheless, the fact that it was squashed or whatever, or damaged like that, is reason enough on its own to make a trachea. However, the Rambam says, what Rav Nachman is telling us over here, is that is not true of the womb. If you find, in the course of checking the animal, you find that the womb has been squashed or damaged or whatever, the animal is not traced because of that. That's fine. The point is that Rambam understands. We're not talking about the fact, we're not focusing on the fact that the baby in the course of being born doesn't have Rishu Kevarim. We're focusing on the fact that when you check for Rishu Kevarim, if you find that there's something wrong with the womb, no problem. The animal is still kosher as long as nothing else has Rishu. Okay. So Rava says to Rav Nachman, Tani de Messiah, I can find a brisa that supports what you just said. That when it comes to the womb, there's no issue of Rishu Kevarim. Because you have a brisa that says like this. A baby boy, even on the day he was born, Ben Yom Echad, by the way, doesn't mean 24 hours old, a day old. It means even when he's on the day he's born. On the day he's born. Metame b'ziva. If Zoiv comes out of him, he will be tame as a Zoiv. Zoiv is some kind of pathological condition or whatever, some kind of discharge that's similar to semen, but not exactly. It's a slightly different consistency. No, you're thinking of like gonorrhea or something. That's something else. Ziva, it's conceivable. It's a rare thing to happen, but it could happen. So it could happen, whether an extra testosterone, whatever it is. Anyway, the point is, the same way at the Ziva is similar to semen, or similar to shechlas zera, although it's a slightly different color and a slightly different consistency. But if such stuff comes out of even a baby, even on the day he's born, then he's tamei as a zav, just as if he was an adult.
And you have to say it's blood.
Because not with a man doesn't come tell me with a discharge of blood. A girl, you're right. Actually, the same Mishnah, the same Braisa or whatever in Nidda tells us that yes, if a girl has a discharge of blood on the day she's born, then she's in Nidda.
Has a discharge.
For one second, not blood. Ziva, which is again similar to shechlas zera, but a somewhat different color and a somewhat different consistency. Shechlas zera is white. Zoiv is off white. Shechlas zera has a thick consistency to it. Zoiv has a thinner consistency to it.
Okay.
So whatever it is exactly, medically, I don't know, but whatever, it's some kind of discharge, whatever it is. The din is a person can become tame from being a zov at any age, even on the day he was born.
But if he has a urethral discharge, is he becoming tame or not?
If it meets the criteria of ziva.
Yeah.
If it's anything other than shechlas zera or ziva, then no. Blood doesn't make him tame, no.
No.
Just right. Okay. Now, the Isaac Yeshba Mishum Mistukei Vorin. So, Rava says, so here's the proof that I'm bringing to you, Rav Nachman, from this Braisa. If you were to argue that whenever a baby is born, you have a potential issue of Mistukei Vorin, and therefore, like we're saying, you have to wait 24 hours, etc., then why would the baby be Tomei? Ikri Kan Mibsore Veloi Machmas Oinsa. You have a general rule when it comes to Ziva, that we apply a rule as follows, that a person is tomei from being a zav only if it was bibisorei, only if it was just naturally from his flesh, veloi machmas oinsei, not where there was an oinus. So you actually have, in other words, there's a mishnah in zavim and in mesecta zavim that mentions that when you have a zav, okay, so the first discharge of a zav really is basically considered like shechlas zera anyway, so it doesn't really make much of a difference. But when it comes to the second discharge, the din is a person becomes a zav actually only if he has two discharges, or one that's long enough to be considered as two. Let's not get into that. The point is, when it comes to the second discharge, where we have to know whether he's a zav or whether he's just a baal keri, we have to look at, were there any external factors that might have led to him becoming a zav? We have to check, for example, did he, let's say, overeat, which might cause that. That's the point. In other words, if he overate and then he has ziva, then it's not ziva. It's considered another instance of keri. He's only tamei for the one. He only has to go to the mikveh and he's tamei for that.
The nature of the discharge doesn't count.
So that's right, exactly. And the same thing, we have to check if he overdrank, if he had a hiver, seven different things, if he jumped, whatever, a bunch of different things. So the point is, that makes it that he's not a zav. Now, you're telling me over here that a baby is able to become tomei as a zav if there was an issue of risuke evarim, that would be the equivalent of him being sick, which being sick is one of the seven things that would prevent him from being a zav. So that proves, therefore, what you just said, Reb Nachman. There's no risk about him. We can't consider the baby after he's born to be sick or potentially sick or whatever. Therefore, if he has an emission of ziva, then yeah, he can become a zav. However, the Gemara says that's not a valid proof.
It is nitzah. The baby can't eat them.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, but still, the point is that you would still say, if you were to say he was a chola, that would be reason enough to say he's not a zav. Therefore, that must show he's not considered a chola. However, the Gemara says no, because ha'chab mayaskinah, not necessarily, because maybe the case that the Braita is talking about, where a newborn baby can become a zav, is kigun shiyata derech doifen. Let's say he was born by C-section. We're there. You can't say for sure there's not going to be risuke varim over there. Even if we were to think, well, risuke varim, if we were to talk about that there's the potential of risuke varim during the birth, it would be when it's born naturally through the birth canal, where it has to squeeze through. So then conceivably you could think there was risuke varim. If it was done by C-section and removed from the womb, then obviously there's no risuke varim. Maybe the case where a newborn baby can become tomei as a zav is only in that case, not necessarily if he was born by a natural birth. So it's not necessarily a valid proof from that braisa.
You could argue
that maybe when a baby is born normally through the birth canal, maybe if he has diva, he taka will not become tomei because of machmas oimsa, because there could conceivably be risuke varim over here. However, if he's born by C-section, then there's not that issue, and that's when he could become Talmud. You can't prove necessarily from this Braisa that a natural birth, there's no risuke evo, which is what Reb Nachman was telling us.
There is none.
That's Reb Nachman is telling us you don't have to worry about it. Rava is attempting to bring a proof from this Braisa. Right. We can say that there's not risuke evo, but we can't necessarily prove it from this Braisa, because maybe this Braisa is not talking about a natural birth.
If
we knew that the Raisa is talking about a natural birth, then it would be a valid proof.
Exactly.
But we don't know.
We don't.
Okay. By the way, Rashi makes an interesting point.
Because it could be
the Raisa is talking about specifically a baby born by C-section. By the way, Rashi makes an interesting point over here that we're talking about, that it has to be talking about a case where Rashi says where the mother also is still alive after the C-section, because Rashi says if it was that the mother died while still pregnant, then the baby is very unlikely to be born alive in the first place by C-section.
But
the point is, we're talking about a case where a baby was born alive by C-section. That implies, in other words, that the mother was still alive at the time. Whether she'll survive afterwards, after the operation, okay, in those days they didn't really have the technology to be able to keep the mother alive for very long afterwards, but maybe, okay. Anyway, fine. Toshma, come, let's prove from another braisa, which says, Egel Shinola Biyantav, if a calf, or any,
we still want to,
Rav is out to prove what Rav Nachman had said about there's no risuke varim when it comes to the womb. So we haven't been able to prove it from the first braisa, because maybe that's not talking about a natural birth, but how about another braisa? Egel shenola b'yomtev, if a calf is born on yomtev, shoshtinot b'yomtev. There's no issue of muktzah, because you could have shechted the mother earlier in the day, and then the baby would have been mutter along with it. That's a concept called ben kakua. No, 8 days is for a carbon. So the din is you're allowed to shech that baby animal on that same yom tov itself. There is a din called oseves b'noi, which that's true. We're going to talk about later on in Amos Daf. You can't shech the mother animal and baby animal on the same day.
Yeah.
However, what it is like this. In this case, you could have, before the baby was born, you could have shechted the mother, and the baby would have been mutter along with the mother, which is a concept called ben pekur, which we're going to talk about in the next paragraph. Instead, what you did is you didn't check the mother. Instead, you waited until after the baby was born, then you checked it. Fine, you don't say the baby is not considered muktzah, even though it was born on that day. You should argue it's nolad, like an egg that was just hatched. No, it's different, because it was mukhan agav imay, because you could have checked the mother, and then you would have been able to eat the baby as well. Anyway, the point is, again, we see now we're talking on one single day of Yom Tov, so obviously, again, you're allowed to check it within 24 hours, there's no problem with risk of ivarim. Same thing. Maybe the bride is talking about where the baby was born by C-section. Maybe, though, if the baby was born naturally, maybe your tackle would have to wait 24 hours. Toshma, the shovin. Okay, let's bring proof from another bride. Namely like this. In Masechta Beitza, you have a machloitis. Now, we know that you have a bechor of a kosher animal. You have to give it to, in the times of the Beit Mikdash, you would bring it as a korban. And nowadays, you have to wait till it develops the mum, and then you give it to the kohen, and then, well, you give it to the kohen, you wait till it develops the mum, and then they can check it. suppose that you have a bechor where a mum develops in it on Yom Tov. Now, you have two ways of looking at it. You have one opinion that says that it's muktzah. You can't shecht it on Yom Tov because at the beginning of Yom Tov it was muktzah. Because before Yom Tov, at the beginning of Yom Tov, you couldn't have shechted it because it was osur, it was still kodshim. So therefore it's muktzah on Yom Tov. It's not designated, it's a bechor, it's automatically kodesh.
Right.
The only thing that's going to allow you to shecht it and eat it is if it develops a mum. So if it develops a mum on Yom Tov, at the beginning of Yom Tov, it was still muktzah.
Right. Therefore you cannot eat it.
Therefore you have to wait till after Yom Tov to shecht it when it's no longer muktzah.
Yeah.
Now, so you have like this. So you have a machlokas about that point, but you have like this. If a baby bechor was born on Yom Tov with a mum on it already, then the Braisa says, v'shavin, everybody agrees, shem nolad hu mumo imo, that if a bechor was born already with a mum, shazem min amuchan, that's considered already prepared, that's not considered mukta, because it never became also, because it only becomes kodesh as a bechor once it's born. Kol bechor asher yivolad. While it's in the womb, it's not yet kodesh. That's the point. It doesn't have the kedusha of a bechor yet.
It doesn't have no kedusha.
Right. That's the point. So therefore, in other words, so we're saying that if you have, again, so you have this baby was born on Yom Tov, which then you ought to say, well, it's a bechor, you can't do anything with it, but it had a womb, therefore we're saying that it's mutter to shecht, right, and we're allowed to right away on Yom Tov, it's not considered mutter. So now, again, obviously, we're talking about it was born on Yom Tov. You're talking about shechting at that same day of Yom Tov. So obviously, that shows. Therefore, there's no risk of kevarim. You don't have to worry. You don't have to wait any 24 hours. V'chitema hachinamish yotze derech zeifen. You're going to try to answer the same answer as previously, that it was born by C-section. Doesn't work. Derech doifen mikodesh. If a baby animal is born by C-section, it doesn't have any kedusha of a bechor, right? It's not. Even though you have Reb Shimon holds to a certain extent that a baby born by C-section, to a certain extent, Reb Shimon holds has the same dinim as a regular baby. In particular, what it is when you have the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara of a human mother when she gives birth to a baby, where we know that the Torah tells us in Parashas Tazria, she's Tomei for 7 days with a boy, 14 days with a girl. The Chachamim hold that doesn't apply if the baby was born by C-section. Reb Shimon holds it does. However, even Reb Shimon agrees, even though he says that C-section is like a regular birth insofar as the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara, he agrees, l'inyan kodshim, when it comes to kodshim over here, as far as a bechor, she'ene kodesh, that it doesn't have that kedusha.
Okay, so everything else Reb Shimon is the same?
Except for a bechor in general kodshim, right. The point being, obviously, therefore, we can't be talking about this bechor was born by C-section. We have to be talking about it with a natural birth. And if we're saying that there's no problem shechting and eating it that day because it was already born with a mum, that means there's no risk of kevarim, right? However, the Gemara says, not necessarily, because hachav mayaskin and shehifris agave karka. Because maybe when the braisa says that you're allowed to eat it that day, means when it was standing up, it stuck its feet. It braced itself on the ground to try and stand up. We were going to say in connection with this whole concept of risa kevarim, that once the animal stands up, then you don't need to wait 24 hours. You can check it and do the bedikah right away. So therefore, that's what we could be talking about. This bechor was born with a mum. It right away was able to stand up. That shows, in other words, that you don't have to wait 24 hours. Well, that doesn't show necessarily there's no risa kevarim. You still have to do bedikah. However, if it hadn't stood up, you would need both. You would need to wait 24 hours and do a bedikah.
Right.
Now, the fact that it stood up takes away the requirement to wait 24 hours. You still need to do a bedikah.
Why it takes away the...
Because the fact that it stood up in general, that's what we're going to say soon, with any case of potential risk of favoring. If we're going to say soon that if the animal is able to stand up, then that removes the requirement to wait 24 hours. You still have to do a bedikah for it, unless you have a few possibilities. If the animal doesn't stand up, then you need to wait 24 hours and do a bedikah. If it stands up, you don't need the 24 hours, but you still need the bedikah. If it walks normally, then you don't even need the bedikah.
What's the point of waiting 24 hours?
Because some injuries don't come out right away. It takes time for the damage to the organ to develop to the point where you can see it. So that's the point, in other words. So maybe we could say the Braisa is telling us So the braita could still work even if we were to say there's risk of kevorim, there's potential risk of kevorim when it comes to a baby being born. You would say like this: if the animal stood up, okay, there's still potential risk of kevorim. You're still going to have to do a bedik after you shechted. But then at least the point would be at least then that you don't have to wait for 24 hours.
There's still no proof, right?
So Rav Nachman's din is still a din. But the Rav Nachman's din is still a valid din because we don't have anybody arguing with it. But there's no braisa that we can bring as a proof for it. Okay.
If you cannot bring a braisa, why is it a din?
Because we don't have anybody else arguing with it. If we had somebody else arguing with it, then we'd say we could understand the braisa a different way. That doesn't mean we have to understand it.
When you bring a din.
When the Amoroi say a din, when an Amora says a din, we try to see if we can support it or contradict it based on something from Tanoi.
Even if we cannot,
the din can still be a valid din. Yes. That's how it works. Yes.
Because
he said it. He had it for Kabbalah from his Rebbein. Yes, so he says, okay, so we don't have proof for it from the words of Tanoi, but that doesn't mean.
Since we cannot disprove it either.
Right, exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Onward. Okay, but Omer Rav Nachman, then Rav Nachman says another din. About another din about this whole concept of Nefula. Based on mitzvachayim, when it comes to a slaughterhouse, when you knock down the animal in order to shecht it, so then you also ein by mishum risukei varim. There's no issue of risukei varim, and as we'll see in a second one. So here's a case: Hahu Torah de Nafal. There was once a case in a shlachtos where an ox fell down or was knocked down, whatever. The ishtama called the gichuse, and you could hear the sound that it made. So Rashi explains gichuse to be related to a word that means like moaning or groaning or whatever. It made like so the gichuse we have in front of us in the Gemara is nigichuse. On the side of it here it says it should be gichuse. Whatever. The point is, Rashi understands that gini chuse is related to a word meaning gineah, which means like to groan. It means the animal, like the animal mood or whatever, with a very loud noise, which makes it sound like it must have gotten badly hurt if it's making such a loud noise. Nevertheless, all Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta, the Rambam explains differently. The Rambam explains we're not talking about a noise that the animal makes. With his throat or whatever. We're talking about just the loud bang that it makes when it bangs onto the ground. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta came into that shlachtos, shokol mishufri shufri, and took from the best cuts of meat from that animal. In other words, he was demonstrating by that it's definitely kosher. All amri le rabbanan menolacha. So the other chachamim there ask him, where do you get that from? Why are you not worried about risuke varim? So he answers them, hachi amar Rav, because Rav said that what happens in a case like this, because the animal basically expects that it's going to be knocked down, it braces itself by digging its hooves into the ground so it doesn't fall like all at once. It braces itself so it's more of a gradual fall. Even though it made a loud noise afterwards, and even though the bang itself was very loud, nevertheless, we don't have to worry about risk of avarim. Because again, it expected it, and therefore it digs in its hooves and then it braces itself so it doesn't fall quite so hard.
And that's also halacha.
That's halacha, yeah. Okay.
It's buffered its fall.
Right. Okay. Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav. Okay. So now let's talk about what happens if you have a case of potential risk of avarim. You have a case where an animal, let's say, did fall off a roof unexpectedly or whatever. So then, Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav. Omda, if the animal was able to stand up, ain't it tzricha mesles. Then you don't have to wait the 24 hours. However, b'dika vade boya. However, definitely in that case does require b'dika. You do have to check, as we're going to say soon, you have to check to make sure there was no risk of avarim. Holcha, however, if the animal actually walks, and the Rishonim say that means we're talking about it walks normally, not, for example, it's dragging its feet or whatever, then einas tzricha b'dika, then it doesn't even require b'dika. Now, since you have Rishonim all the way back to the Bahag, who say that we don't have the expertise for b'dika, And many of the Rishonim accept that, although Rashi over here does not, then practically speaking, according to that, what that means is any time that you need Bedikah, then you have a problem. The animal is still Teres Misafik. So as long as the animal did not actually walk, then you have to consider it Teres Misafik.
The minute it walks,
then you're good. Yeah. Rav Chiya Ba'ashi disagrees. He says, "Achasu v'achasu tzricha b'dika." Either way, whether it stood up or whether it just stood up, or even if it walked, tzricha b'dika, then it still requires b'dika. Okay. Amar Rav Yirmiyah Ba'aba Amar Rav Yirmiyah Ba'acha Amar Rav. So we had Rav Yehuda saying in the name of Rav that once stood up, then you don't need the mess left. So Rav Yirmiyah Ba'acha tells us in the name of Rav, it doesn't even need to be that it actually stood up. Poshka Yodalamud, even if it's stretched out, its four leg, in order to stand up, Alpha Pishalai Omda, even if it didn't stand up yet, that's considered that already it stood. Similarly, Okra Ragla Lahalich, if it picked up its leg, getting ready to walk, Alpha Pishalai Hocha, then even if it didn't actually walk, that's considered already that it walked. Rav Chista says, no, near a lamod, you don't even need that it actually stuck out a foreleg or something. Even if it just it's strengthening itself and wanting to stand up, that's already good enough to be considered that it stood up, and then you don't need the 24 hours. Okay, the hilchos. Okay.
Many different opinions.
Well, so far, Rav Chista is the most lenient one, that near a lamod is already the equivalent of standing. Whereas Rav Yirmiyah Bar Achba has said that it actually has to stick out a foreleg to get ready to stand up, and then he also said that if it picks up its hind leg getting ready to walk, then that's already considered the equivalent of walking. Okay, the hilchosa, the actual halacha, hecha denochla min agag, if it fell off the roof unknowingly, but under, but and it only stood up, below holcha, it didn't actually walk, it requires b'dikah, you don't have to wait for 24 hours, v'im holcha, and if it walked, then you don't even need b'dikah. Okay, the Marashal takes all that out, because basically not really saying anything different than we said before, but that is the bottom line halacha.
It actually has to stand up,
and that takes care of the 24 hours, or it has to walk, and that takes care of the whole issue, and then you don't even need b'dikah. And again, when it comes to walking, the Rishonim say that it means that it has to actually walk like it would have walked normally before it fell. Now this that we're talking about, you have an animal that fell down, and we're saying therefore we're talking about that you need a bedika. What exactly do you need to check for? You have to check around the bnei me'ayim. Now bnei me'ayim. So bnei me'ayim in the narrow sense means the digestive system. Like the stomachs and the intestines or whatever. So right, the bowels. So Rashi, in fact, explains like that. For example, we learned before that the animal was traced if most of the abdominal muscles or tepach of them, whatever, have been ripped. So you'd have to check for that kind of thing. You would have to check, for example, for holes in the intestines, all that sort of thing. Some of the Rishonim understand that more broadly, that Keneged B'nei Me'ayim would also include you'd have to check, for example, the lungs for punctures and other internal organs like that. So it would still mean, though, B'nei Me'ayim, according to that, would just mean like whatever is within the torso of the animal, as opposed to the next opinion that we're going to say that requires more than the torso. So in other words, according to Rashi, all you need to check is like the back half of the animal, basically, in this case, according to this opinion. And according to other Rishonim, it would mean you have to check the front half as well, but not, according to this opinion, not necessarily the neck area. Amalei Marzutra, however, Marzutra says to him, Hochi Aminin Meshmeidet HaPapa. No, we say in the name of HaPapa, you have to check the entire internal cavity of the animal, meaning basically you have to check it head to toe.
The chest and the abdomen
and also the neck area and everything else. Yeah. So Hunamar, the grandson of Nechemya, asked Ravashi, Simonin Mai, would you have to check the simonim, for example, to the windpipe and the windpipe in the esophagus,
right,
for example, to make sure that those didn't get torn out of place or something. Amalei says no. Simonim koshin heinets on the tefila. The simonim are hard when it comes to reinforced. When it comes to falling, there's no particular issue of that they might have been torn out of place as a result of falling. All right. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Suppose you have, now let's talk about a bird got banged on the surface of the water. So in other words, it fell unexpectedly and it landed hard on the surface of the water. Now there could be a problem of risk of kevarim. The surface of the water is pretty hard.
Well, it depends how high you fall.
Well, obviously, we're 10 kvachim, as usual. However,
that's not hard.
Well, still, it's enough. That's enough.
I mean, 20 centimeters.
Yeah, 10 kvachim is more than 20 centimeters. Even the smallest opinion of a tefach makes it to be 3 centimeters. So 30 centimeters, you're talking 30 centimeters. You're talking 10 inches. Okay, whatever. You'd have that possibility. Kibin sheshot maloy kemasai. So we said with a land animal, it has to be able to walk in order for it to not have to check it. In the case of a bird, the equivalent is once it swims in the water, once it swims in the water an amount equal to its height, then that's enough. In other words, so if you're talking about it, it's like walking. So in other words, yeah, if you're talking about a bird that's a foot tall, then it needs to be able to swim a foot. It needs to be able to swim a foot in the water, and then we know there's no risk of kevarim. However, the Gemara says, "V'layamar and elamim matzal amayla." Now, this that was saying that if it goes only its own height, that's considered enough. That would apply only if it's going from downstream to upstream against the current. So then you know it's swimming with it. Then you know it's swimming under its own strength. But if it's with the current, could be Maya Hudashvalu. It could be the current is just carrying it. You don't have proof from that it didn't have risk of it. No. Because it's sitting there on the surface of the water, like a duck or something. It's sitting on the surface of the water. We're not saying it's dead. We're talking about that it may be internally injured. So therefore, if it just moves a foot, let's say, with the current, that doesn't necessarily show there was any risk of
it. It's in the current.
It's sitting in the water, like a duck sits in the water, yeah. However, the e maya kaimi, however, if it's still water, less one ball, then there's no issue, because then either way, as long as it moves a foot, then it means it's moving under its own strength. The ishodet sibi, the kadme, what about another possibility? Let's say you throw a stick into the water. Yeah. So let's say, for example, the bird is going with the current. But let's say you threw a stick into the water, which is also flowing with the current, the kadme, and then you see a bird get the head of the stick. Okay, then good. Then you know you're good, because then the fact that the bird was able to go faster than the stick, meaning it's not that the current that's carrying it. So then even downstream it would be good and it wouldn't require the intellect.
If it goes faster than the current, right.
Now let's talk about what kind of things might a bird fly into that would or wouldn't cause risk of kevarim. Glima masiach, suppose you have a garment which is stretched out. You have it like stretched out on a frame or poles or something. So it's stretched out, it means it has a certain hardness there that it doesn't give so easily. Therefore, chashinan, so if a bird bangs into that, then you have to be concerned about risk of kevarim because it bangs into something hard.
It's a window that it cannot see through.
A window, obviously, is glass, is all the more so. I mean, the Gemara's not even talking about that. The Gemara's not even talking about windows, I guess, because it wasn't very common to have glass-paned windows in those days. But, yeah. But anyway, so you have a garment that's stretched out on a frame or something, and it bangs into that. Then you have a potential problem of risk of kevarim because it bangs into something that doesn't yield easily. Deloy masiach, on the other hand, if the garment is not stretched so tightly, loy chashin, and then you don't have to worry because then it has some give. So then the bird won't have been damaged by flying into it. And also, let's say the garment is stretched out, but it was folded first. So let's say they folded in half, and then they stretched it out over there. Then also, there's no problem of risk of kevarim, because then it doesn't get stretched out as much. It still has some, the fact that it was folded in half. In other words, you took the garment, you folded it in half. You folded the garment in half, then you stretched it out over poles or something. So then fine. So then you're okay, because actually this is showing where it wasn't stretched, but whatever, the point is, if it was folded and then stretched over the pegs, it's not going to be so hard. It's not going to be so unyielding. The fact that it was folded first means there's going to be some give to it. So lochashin, and then we know what to work. Isla, okay, let's talk about another case. Isla, suppose that a bird fell into a net that was spread out in the air.
Isla is a
net, Rashi says. Umakarvi kitri, so it depends. If the knots of it are very close together, chashin, then we have to be concerned of risk of because then it's a very unforgiving surface. Loy makarvi kitri, but if the knots are not so close together, loy chashin, then we know what to worry about it. How close are we talking about? So the Meiri says that it would have to be close enough. No, close enough means that it's so close a weave that the bird's foot would not be able to fit be in the spaces between one. Yeah, so then that would be a fairly close weave. Oh,
yeah.
Forget about half box. That's a very tight weave. I guess less than an S even probably. Whatever. The point is, I guess it depends on the size of the bird, but the point is, if it's such a tight weave, then there's a problem of risk. But if it's a looser weave, then not. Okay. Chitna. Now let's talk about what happens if the bird falls onto flax. Chitna is flax, yeah.
How do you say it in Hebrew?
I think this is how they say it in modern Hebrew. Okay, anyway. The Ovid Bituni. The Ovid Bituni, if the flax is bundled in, is made into bundles, Chayshinim, then we have to be concerned because the fact that it's in bundles means it's hard. On the other hand, if the bird lands on the sides of the sides of the bundle, in other words, you have the part of the bundle in the middle where it's tied, where it's tied ropes or whatever around it, and then you have the ends where you have the flax stalks are kind of hanging loose over there. So then, fine, those parts are softer. Those parts are softer because they're not tied as tightly together. Therefore, if the bird lands on them, no problem. Isuraisa, another case would be, what if you have, if it lands on a bundle of sticks, and then we have to be concerned of risuke varn, because that's hard. Kisna de daik would not fit. Suppose it falls, again, on flax, but here we're not talking about in bundles, where the flax was beaten, the daik that was beaten to get the flax fibers out of the stalks, but not fit, and it was combed, loichashin, and then you don't have to worry about it because then it's soft. Dayik, well, enough it. But if it was beaten to get the fibers out, well, enough it. But it hasn't yet been removed from the, it hasn't yet been combed out of the stalks. Chayshin, and then we have to be concerned because the stalks, the fibers have been, there's a couple of stages in making linen out of flax. One of those stages involves that you take the stalks that contain the flax fibers in them and you beat them in order to break the stalks, and that way you can get out the fibers. And afterwards, you have pieces of stalk mixed in with the fibers, so then you have to comb them out. So if you haven't combed them out yet, then you have a problem because the stalks themselves are hard, and therefore you have a problem of risk of burning. If you already combed it out, then you're fine because the flax fibers themselves are soft. The Ovid Bizri, another case would be, what happens if the flax is gathered together in bundles? So Bizri is similar, is bundles, like we said before, but it's smaller bundles than we were talking about before. However, given the Ispe Kitri, however, the problem is that a bundle has knots in it, because you have places where you knotted it together. Therefore, Hashin, and therefore we have to be concerned of risk of paper. So in other words, there were two cases. One where we had, just because the bundle itself was large and therefore it's very hard and unyielding. Here we're talking about, it's a smaller bundle, but the problem is it landed on one of the knots, and therefore, yeah. Okay, the Rashash wants to argue the word bizri, he says, means seeds. So maybe what we're talking about is, in other words, we're talking about flax stalks that have seeds in them, where the seeds are hard or hard, and therefore you have a problem. Okay. More cases. Daxa, now let's talk about, okay, so after you comb out the flax, now you have the combings of the pieces of stalk that you combed out of them. So before we were talking about when they're still mixed with the flax, now what about those pieces by themselves, if you have a pile of those? So daxa, if it lands on the coarser pieces of the shell of the stalk. Daxa means fine pieces, but not so fine. It means like coarser pieces. Chayshin, and then there's a concern. Daxa, but if daxa, I mean, not daxa, if it's very small, if it's a pile of very small pieces,
like
daxa and daxa. Well, like daxa and daxa, I mean, not daxa, in the terrorist, yeah. So then, like chayshin, and then we're not concerned because that's softer. Navra chayshinan. If the bird lands on Navra, so Rashi describes like this: you have a kind of vine or ivy or something that often grows around palm trees. They take it off the palm trees, they dry it, and then they make it into they make long ribbon-like things out of it, and they use those to braid them into ropes.
Palm tree
rope. So it's not palm trees themselves, but it's a fiber that grows around the palm trees. The fiber that grows around the palm trees, they cut it into strips and they braid several of those strips together to make ropes. So before they braid it, it's hard. So therefore, that stuff is called navra chashina. Then we have to be concerned if a bird bangs into it. Kimchasa, but after they cut it into strips, then it's softer loychashin, and then there's no problem if a bird lands on a pile of that. Kitma nehila chashinan, if a bird lands on a pile of ashes that were sifted, where once they were sifted, then it makes it that they're much more packed tightly together. Therefore, it's hard. So therefore, chashinan, we have to be concerned of risuke garden. Loy nehila, but if it's just ashes as they were, where they weren't sifted, then it's softer. Loy chashin, there's more air space between the granules of it. Loy chashin, and then we don't have to worry about it.
Why don't we say the same thing with Surveyor, is that let the bird stand up, walk, and fly.
Again, if the bird gets up and flies and whatever, then for sure there's no problem. What we're trying to establish over here is, in these cases, let's say it didn't get up, or let's say you didn't wait the 24 hours or whatever. But what we're saying is, in the case, again, according to most Rishonim, when we say in all these cases where we say loy chashin, it means you don't even require bedikah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the point. In other words, so for example, this last case, if it fell on a pile of unsifted ashes, loy chashin, and we don't have to worry, you can still shecht it on the spot and not require bedikah or anything. Yeah, according to the Ran, yeah, it would mean that we'd still have to do bedikah.
So not everybody agrees,
but most Rishonim take the view that loy chashin. Choyl hadak loy chashin. The reason why the Gemara is giving us such a long list over here is because these are all kinds of common things that they had in those days. So it's part of a person needs to know. I mean, the Gemara could have said generally that it's hard versus soft, but that indeed is hard versus soft, or the Gemara is going to say through slippery versus not slippery. And in fact, that's how the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch bring it more generically like that. But here, I guess the Gemara wanted to give a lot of the specifics because it's a practical thing. People on a day-to-day basis, people need to know. A bird lands on one of these things, what do you do? Okay. Choyl hadak loy chashin. And if the bird lands on fine sand, then there's no problem because fine sand, it slides off. In other words, it lands, but then its fall is sort of broken, and then it sort of slides so that the full force of the fall is not in one place. On the other hand, if it's coarse sand, then you have a problem. In particular, Rashi says, because you have, in the coarse sand, you have pebbles in it, so those are going to damage the bird. Avak drachim chashin, and if the bird lands on dust of the road, which also gets pressed down, because people and animals and whatever walk on it, chashin, and then we have a problem, and then we have to be choshish. And as usual, choshish, again, according to most of the Rishonim, choshish doesn't mean necessarily... It means you have to wait 24 hours. You have to wait 24 hours and do bedikah. Yeah, unless again, if it stands up, then you don't need the 24 hours. And if it walks or flies, then you don't need the bedikah. But chayshinin in all these cases would mean there is a possible problem of rusa sevarim, and therefore you have to take the appropriate steps. Tivnav Ovid Bezaga, another case, what if it landed on a pile of straw and it's made into a bundle? Chayshinan, then you have a problem. Loy Ovid Bezaga, on the other hand, if it's not a bundle, but if it's made into a bundle, then it's hard because then it's all pressed against each other. Loy Ovid Bezaga, if it's not made into a bundle, loy chayshinan, no problem. Chiti v'chol d'minayu chayshinan, if it lands on a pile of wheat or anything related to wheat, For example, Rashi says shifoin, which is either rye or oats or whatever. Chashinan, then we have a chash, then we have to be chashish. Sari, v'chol d'minayu chashinan. Similarly, if it lands on barley or anything related to that, then we would have to be chashish. Although Maram Shif over here brings a girsa, which some of the Rishonim have, loy chashinan. That according to them, barley is softer, and you wouldn't have to worry about it. Kol minei kitnius ein behem mishum risukei evarim. Any type of kidney, if any type of beans, there's no problem of risuke barim. The reason is because Rashi says because they slide off each other easily. They're roundish or whatever, so therefore they're more yielding. Levarim in rubia, except for rubia, rubia Rashi says is tiltan. In English, it's called fenugreek. In Israel and other Middle Eastern countries, they have a spicy dish that they make out of the seeds of it called chilbe. So yeah, so there's those kinds of seeds. But those kind don't slide off each other so easily, and therefore a pile of them, if the bird lands on them, is a problem of risk of chimsi, What if the bird lands on a pile of chimsi, which is peas? No, which is peas, Rashi says. Ain by mishum risukei bardim, and there's no problem with risukei bardim because the peas, well, not so much that they're soft. Dried peas can be hard, but the point is they're round, so therefore, like they move around easily. Yeah, they, as opposed to chesti, but if it lands on a pile of chesti, which Rashi says is chickpeas, yesh by mishum risukei bardim, then there is a possible problem of risukei bardim. Qualod milsa, the general rule.
They don't move.
They don't move as easily relative to each other, I guess.
They still run.
They're roundish. They're not quite as round as peas. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Well, the general rule is kol midi de mashrik, anything where one part of it slides easily or moves easily relative to the other. For example, that's what we said with peas. Ain by mishum risukei bardim, there's no problem with risukei bardim because the peas themselves will scatter and move and absorb the blow. Loy mashrit, but if they don't easily move, if they don't easily slide relative to each other, yesh when mishum risukei bardim, then there is a problem with risukei bardim because then they have the full force of the blow over there. Tosfos explains, by the way, that kidney. I mean, we just mentioned peas and chickpeas, and then we mentioned kidneys. So what are we including in kidneys? So Tosfos says, for example, things like lentils and rice and other such things like that. So we're saying those are softish or those are easily moved relatively. We can't eat on Pesach because that's a gzera that goes all the way back to the time of the Rishonim because they're very easily confused with chametz. Sometimes they even actually have chametz mixed in with them. Oh yeah,
that's when they made as a.
Even if the actual grains, they're very similar. They're very similar in many ways. Smaug didn't eat it, but Ashkenazim does. Okay, onwards. Okay. Yeah.
Nothing to do with being planted close to chametz.
Sometimes it is because they're planted close to chametz. Sometimes, in fact, you have there can be actual mixtures of chametz grain in them because they're planted close together. Yeah. Okay.
For both reasons.
Right. Okay. Here's another case. Double. What happens if you have a bird whose wings got stuck together? So Rashi describes that actually dovuk means stuck, but actually what it means is Rashi describes it's like a long stick. It's like a long stick with like a board on the end. It has a board on the end of it. You smear glue on it. You smear a type of glue on it, and then when a bird lands on it, then it gets stuck to it. So that way, when it tries to fly off, then it falls. They have this little board over here. It's not a stick, sorry. You have a board over here. You put glue on it. When a bird lands on the thing, and then it's going to try to glue it on, and then when it tries to fly off, it'll be weighted down by the board, and therefore it'll fall down to the ground, and therefore you'll be able to catch it. So the question is now when it falls down with the board, is there risk of kevarim? Rav Ashi Shori Amema also. So Rav Ashi said it's mutter, and Amema said it's
also. Are you allowed to catch birds this way?
Well, you're allowed to catch birds. I mean, you need to eat them or whatever. Yes. And in general, Tzar Baal HaChaim doesn't apply when you're doing it for a constructive purpose. So here, you're doing it for which is you want to eat it, or you want to bring it as a carbon, or whatever it is. Yeah. Okay. So Rav Ashi Shori Amema also. Rav Ashi says that if the bird got stuck to this board, then it's mutter, Amema said it's also. So let's clarify the machlokas. The chad gapa, if the bird got stuck only by one wing and its other wing is still free, the kolam will cling to the shari. Then everybody would agree that it's mutter. Because then the fact that it's able to still use one wing means it's able to break its fall. Ki pligi betray gapi. The machlokas between Rav Ashi and Amema would be what if it was stuck with both wings, right? Manda Osar, so Amema, who says it's also Omalach, he says the reason why you have the possibility of Risukei Varim Hechi Nekum, because how is it supposed to be able to lift itself up? In other words, what happens? Like this, when a bird is falling, usually it'll flap its wings to break its fall a little bit. But here it can't flap, even one wing would be fine, two wings for sure, it doesn't have anything. Not, well, that's going to be the next version of the Gemara. Wait, but according to this version, one wing it's still enough. It's able to flap enough. It's able to get enough lift to be able. It won't prevent itself from falling, but at least it'll be able to fall a little more softly. So therefore, but if both wings are, then it has no way. So therefore, when it lands on the ground, it's going to land very hard. Uman deshari, whereas Rav Ashi who says it's mutter, even when it's two wings, Amalach, he'll answer you. Okay, but even so, Efshe b'neiko ma'ikli degati. Fine, but what can happen is, as the bird is falling, it can still sort of hold itself up by the tips of its wings. In other words, it may not be able to fly because wings are actually stuck, but still it can sort of brace itself with the tips of its wings to be able to make that when the board lands on the ground, that it shouldn't immediately, that its body shouldn't immediately follow that. That there should be a fraction of a section over there, and therefore to break the fall. The Ikadamri, another version of the Machlokas, goes like this. The Trey Gapi Koamale Pligidos. So if it was stuck by both wings, everybody would agree it's also, because for sure then it has no way of breaking its fall. Ki Pligi Bechad Gapa. The Machlokas would be between Amemer and Ravashi, according to the second version, would be if it was stuck by only one wing. Manda Shori Ravashi, who says it's Mutter Omalach, he'll say, okay, Epsha Deporach Bechad Gapa. The fact is, it's still able to move one wing, so it's still able to get enough lift to be able to break its fall. Umanda also, whereas Amema, who says it's also, they'll say, Kivin Deba Highland must be Parach. Okay, but since it can't fly, since it can't generate any lift with the one wing because it's stuck, Behind Amulet must be Parach, it's not really going to be able to do anything effectively with the other wing either. And therefore, he would say it's also even in that case. If one is stuck, then the other one is stuck. Then, yes, right. The Hilchsa, the bottom line halacha, betray Gapi also, Behad Gapi Shari, if it's stuck by both wings, it's also, if it's stuck by one wing, it's Mutter. So that would, according to the first version, that would mean the halacha is like that the halacha is like a meimar, and according to the second version, it would be the halacha is like a rashi. Okay, but either way, that's the bottom line. Fine. In any case, two is also one is mutter. Yeah. Okay. Next case in the Mishnah, we said nishtabru roiv talisel. We said another case where an animal is chased if most of its ribs are broken. We learn in a braisa. Elohim roiv flois. What do we mean by the majority of ribs? So like this. Anatomically, an animal has 26 ribs, 13 on each side. But in the Gemara over here, we're only going to talk about 11 on each side. So you have a couple of explanations among Rishonim. Either it's that we eliminate the first two ribs closest to the head because those are smaller. In fact, we learned earlier we had earlier in our parak a definition of the chazeh as far as when you give the chazeh that you wave together with the korban shlamim and give to the kohen, and we mentioned in that connection two ribs. So we had Rashi versus Rabbeinu Hanan or what the exact definition is. The one way of explaining it is that it meant that we're eliminating the first two ribs on each side. So you eliminate those four, then you're left with 22.
Because they're smaller
and they don't have, and as the Gemara says, they don't have marrow in them. The other way of understanding it is that we're eliminating the first one and the last one. And again, for similar reasons, because the last because they're different than the other ones, right? Either way, we're saying in the Gemara here, you're left with 22 ribs that are considered ribs as far as halakha is concerned. Okay, so Elohein Roiv Floy, so what is considered the majority of the ribs, Sheish Mikan v'Sheish Mikan, if you have six ribs that are broken on each side, so then you have 12 out of 22, that's the majority. Oi, achas v'Sheish Mikan v'achas Mikan, or even if you don't have a majority on both sides, which is in the first case, you have 11 on one side and one on the other side, that's enough to make the animal trace, because either way you have 12 ribs broken. The Iri says, when we talk about the ribs being broken, we're talking about where would they have to be broken for the animal to be traced? Only if they're broken in the half closer to the shedra. In other words, each rib wraps around half the body, more or less, from the spine on top to the sternum on bottom. So you have, you measure the length of the rib. You measure the length of the rib from top to bottom, and if the break is anywhere in the top half, then it's chased. Once you have enough of them broken, then the animal's chased. But if the break is somewhere in the bottom half, then it doesn't matter. Right, then it doesn't matter. Right. By the way, this is what we're saying in the Gemara over here, that you have 22 ribs that are considered ribs as far as halacha. There's something it talks about. There's something that's brought in Sfarim. I think actually the basis of it goes back to the Zohar, that you find various details in an animal that reflect the structure of Lashon Kodesh. We talked about last week about the lung has five lobes, which the Zohar associates with the five places of articulation of the letters of the alephbase. And here we're saying that's 22 ribs, that's 22 letters of the alephbase.
Five.
The five is, you have five places of articulation. You have the throat, the palate, the tongue, etc.
Not characteristic to the Lashon Kodesh.
Well, granted, but nonetheless, the fact is that you have the Hemotzeris HaPeh, which we often group the letters into those five groups, which is negeya to a lot of things in dictum. For example, you often have a letter, one letter from a group can interchange with another letter from that group. For example, sometimes you have words, for example, Aleph, Hey, Ches, and Ayin, you know, all guttural letters, and sometimes you have words where a Hey substitutes for a Ches, or an Ayin substitutes for a Hey, or what have you. Yeah. So anyway, so Ze'iri is saying that where would a break in a rib count towards the total only if the break is in the upper half of the rib, close the on the side from the midpoint towards the spine. Amar Rav Baba Chana, Amar Rav Yechanan, or with slowest gedolus sheyesh behen mayach. All of this only applies to the larger ribs that contain marrow. So that's why mayach is marrow. Yeah. In modern Hebrew, they use it to mean the brain, but yeah. that's mayach basically means the contents of a bone. So the brain is contained within any content of a bone.
Which one? The bottom one?
Right. So that's the point. In other words, when we say 22 ribs, we're talking only the ones that contain marrow.
That's on bottom one.
No. Forget top or bottom. We're saying everything from the third rib and back, either from the third to the 13th, or we're saying from the second through the 12th. It is true, by the way, depending on the size of the animal and depending on the maturity of the animal, some of them may or may not have marrow in it. But the Gemara is talking over here basically that the ones that generally. Right. Okay. Alma Ula. So Ula says, here's okay, actually, you know, let's leave that for tomorrow, actually. Okay.
Yeah.